Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter for Athlon Sports and Men's Journal, joins us now on WFAN. Nick, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you got it. All right, let's get into this disaster of a Jets week one. I guess I'll leave this first one open-ended. What went wrong?
A whole lot of things. Tackling, defensive line, inability to run the football. But really just comes back to, in my opinion, you look at all the issues the Jets had, whether it was tackling, whether it was setting the edge on the defensive side, unable to run the football. It just seemed that the 49ers were better prepared for that week one game. And it's really the easiest answer to give, because when you have someone like Kyle Shanahan, who is an elite offensive mind in this game, as was his father, you have to look at it and say, okay, well, what did the Jets defense do to try and give different looks that the 49ers have not seen? And the difficult part of this matchup was the fact that the 49ers defense is built exactly the same way as the Jets are. So Shanahan was prepared. He was prepared for all the different wrinkles, and he understood the pressure points that really hurt this kind of defense, this defensive system that the Jets continue to run and consistently run over the last 4 years since Robert Saleh has been here. So it was really just a cascade of issues. It wasn't, it was a poor job of execution-wise. It was a poor job of tackling. The offense did not do enough in their own right. But in the end, I think it goes back to coaching. Kyle Shanahan and his staff completely outcoached Robert Saleh and his.
You know, that's one thing I wanted to touch on here. I mean, you've got Robert Saleh, in my opinion, I've been saying it and saying it until he proves me wrong. I think single-handedly is holding this team back. It's for me, especially the miserable defensive performance. You said the 49ers were better prepared. You cited similar defenses, but maybe I'm mistaken, but Robert Saleh was the defensive coordinator of that 49ers team. Mm-hmm. So why didn't he get the memo?
I think it was more of the, when you have your pressure points and the wide nine defensive look that the Jets love to incorporate, it really just highlights the edge rushers. And when your edge rushers are attacking the quarterback consistently, setting the edge on the outside, it changes the way offenses want to attack you. And what the 49ers did was they just ran stretch after stretch after stretch, and it just put so much onus, so much pressure on Jermaine Johnson and Michael Clemens and Will McDonald. And for that game specifically, they were not up to the task. I thought Johnson, overall in his career, he's been pretty solid. There's still a lot of question marks about Clemens and McDonald. But the fact of the matter is, if there was one game that the Jets could not afford to play with this Hassan Reddick situation going on, it was that kind of contest, because it really showed his impact, not just as an edge rusher, but as a run defender as well, certainly was missing in that particular game.
Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter for Athlon Sports and Men's Journal, joins us on The Fan. And you know what? Let's go there. As I'm sitting on my couch watching this game, I had thoughts of what Hassan Reddick might be doing on his couch. I thought he might have been laughing his ass off. So my question is, because it was just horrible. My question is, do you think, you're there every day. Did that performance by that defensive line put any added pressure or incentive on Joe Douglas to pick up the phone and try to get a deal done?
I think it has to. I really think it does. And I will say, to the Jets' credit, they were missing Leaky Fotu, their interior defensive tackle. And we can, laugh and joke about an interior role player, but he was brought in as the run stuffer, as the Al Woods replacement this offseason. And the fact that he was not on the field very clearly was another issue that the Jets had. But in terms of Reddick, this is a player, and I've said this before, this is a player who has been disrespected since he got drafted by the Arizona Cardinals. He was out of position, playing out of position for the first 3 years of his career. Then they moved him to the natural edge rusher position he's in, and he's been underpaid ever since. He got a one-year, $6 million deal with the Panthers, a three-year, $45 million deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. He's put up 10-plus sacks each of the last 4 years. Only Myles Garrett has done that in that stretch. So he is a top edge rusher in this game. And the longer the Jets go on, where these edge rushing problems, inability to set the edge against the run, inability to rush the passer consistently, those are going to be issues that Joe Douglas is going to have to face. And if this team were to lose to the Titans or fall to 1-2 with a win against Tennessee and a loss to the Patriots, there is going to be immense pressure on Joe Douglas, not just to find a resolution to this situation, but to get Reddick in the building as a player. Because even if you were to trade him, which I know there are some reports saying people around the league expect him to be moved, but even if they were to trade him, you better make sure that there's a top edge rusher coming back, and there's just no team that's going to be willing to give that kind of player up. So the best course of action is for Joe Douglas, really, to swallow his pride, especially if they lose against Tennessee or New England, swallow his pride and say, let's just get this deal done. We need you. We've clearly showed that the last couple of weeks. Let's figure this out now.
I mean, I totally agree, but I'm going to go back to this. You know, you cited a Jets interior defensive lineman that was missing. Well, how about this? Christian McCaffrey was not there.
Oh, yeah.
For the 49ers. So, they still looked overmatched. I mean, I think this Hassan Reddick thing is humongous for this team.
It is. And listen, I've said this before. When you have a defensive player that was in the top five votes for defensive player of the year in 2022, and even with a down year in Philadelphia, that Eagles defense was just horrific in 2023, he still put up 10-plus sacks. You cannot put a price on elite edge rushers. You just can't. And people will look at his run defense. They say, well, he's not as elite as TJ Watt or Myles Garrett or Micah Parsons. And while that's true, if you look at the last 2 years alone in terms of clutch play, every single big play the Eagles defense made in this two-year run with Reddick, he was either the cause or part of the reason why a big play was made, whether it was a pressure that came into an interception, whether it was a sack fumble that altered the game. I was looking at those tapes throughout. It's just consistently, he is a top player in the NFL, and he needs to be paid as such. And it really just comes back to, if you're the Jets, why did you make this move without coming to terms on a long-term extension? Or why did you trade John Franklin Myers and then expect nothing to come out in terms of leverage for Reddick's side? It just seems short-sighted overall from Joe Douglas.
So if we look at, I mean, there's so many different ways we can go into this. Do you think something gets resolved before we move on?
I do. I think, listen, he's 29 years old. He's still looking for this long-term deal. If he sits out the full year, he's not getting that extension ever. He's going to want something. He's going to want to prove himself on the field at some point. I know there are reports saying he's perfectly fine sitting out games. But again, we have to remember the Jets still own his rights if he misses out the entire season. So I think that there will be a resolution at some point, whether it comes after Tennessee, you know, beats the Jets or they're still middle of the pack early on in the season. I do think a resolution is coming.
Well, I like your optimism there. Let's go back to the coaching, because I don't like Robert Saleh. I think he's not a leader of men. But I mean, I looked at the snap counts and the catches and all that for Tyler Conklin, who's a very underrated. They targeted him just 2 times. Have you seen any at practice, any adjustments to get him more involved in this Week 2 game?
Well, the one thing that I would definitely stress is with most practices during the week, we only see about the warm-up period. We're not able, like we were in training camp, to see which players are doing this and which, you know, the strategy based on every single practice. But the one thing that I will say, and Nathaniel Hackett also said this in his press conference, was they just didn't have enough plays. And we can joke and say that that was the same excuse they gave last season, and they had Zach Wilson as the quarterback. But when the time of possession battle is 38 minutes and 40 seconds to 21 minutes and 20 seconds, it's going to be very hard to get some of your top players the ball. And I think the Jets did do a good job on offense of just hammering home Breece Hall, hammering home Garrett Wilson, getting those guys involved as much as they could. But the problem was, they weren't executing enough. They turned the ball over twice. One was an interception, one was a fumble. You're never going to win when you're losing the turnover battle like that. I do think in a game like this against Tennessee, they're not as talented as the 49ers, offensive line, defensive line, linebackers. They're just not the same team. There's going to be an opportunity for Mike Williams, for Tyler Conklin, and even for the fourth-round rookie Braylon Allen, because I thought he was misused in that game. Third and short, fourth and short, a two-point conversion try. Those are the kind of situations that you want to see a power back like Braylon Allen use, and you just didn't. For whatever reason, you know, we just didn't. And I think we're going to be seeing that a lot more as the season progresses, certainly going into this matchup against Tennessee.
Yeah, you know, this $10 million Mike Williams returning from the ACL, I get it. But You wouldn't even, I forgot he was a Jet. 9 snaps. I mean, there's got to be more to go around for him in any given game, regardless of coming back from the ACL.
Well, I think it's always tricky because you don't, with these kind of ACL injuries, Breece Hall, we look at him and his performance last year in week one and say, wow, he touched the ball very, very infrequently. I think it was only just around 7 to 8 touches total in that game, but he was so impactful in helping the Jets win. That's an outlier for a lot of players when they're coming off of ACL injury. And this is really, I've spoken to many doctors about this. They say always it's a 2-year injury. The first year you try to get trust back in your leg. You try to get trust back in your body. The second year is when you're back to 100%. Now, do I think Mike Williams is only going to play, 10, 11 snaps, whatever it was? No, I don't think that's going to happen. They're going to be able to feature him more because he's trusting himself a little more. He didn't have a full training camp. That trust, it was always going to be a process. When the Jets brought Mike Williams in, they knew it would be a process for him to get back on the field and get back to 100%. They were not expecting him to be a world beater week one, week two of the NFL season. This was always a week 8, week 12 kind of thinking ahead version of, hey, we need a big body guy that we can trust late in the season to consistently go up and get footballs in the red zone. That's what Mike Williams' role is going into this year.
Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter for Athlon Sports and Men's Journal, joins us. Okay, so that leaves Alan Lazard. I'm not convinced. What do you say? Is he a real number 2 receiver, a real deal kind of guy?
No, I would say he's probably a number 3. And I think it's fair to assume that he will be the number 3 throughout the year. He had a great game. And let's be fair, he had a great game against the 49ers. He had that one bad drop to begin the game early on, but flushed it away and then continued to go out and he caught 2 touchdown passes. So we have to give him credit for that. He looked very, very good against the 49ers. Granted, they were down, most of that contest anyway. But I think he's a very serviceable number 3 option. He's not paid as a number 3 option. He's paid as a number 2, but he's a serviceable number 3 option that they can trust down at the trade deadline. You get closer to October, November. Do they still feel that they want to try and get Devontae Adams? Probably push out Lazard out to a number 4 guy. But I do think that they were very pleased with what they saw from a former Packer. And certainly having Aaron Rodgers back at quarterback helps.
Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter for Athlon Sports and Men's Journal, joins us. Nick, give me the Nick line here, not the Jets line, because for a team with Super Bowl aspirations, in a loss to one of last year's Super Bowl teams without their star player, is that acceptable in your personal opinion?
No, but I do want to throw a caveat here in that you see a lot of championship teams, a lot of championship caliber teams go through some of these big losses. Just last season, look at the San Francisco 49ers. Late in the year, they take on the Baltimore Ravens, and they get absolutely demolished in that game. It wasn't even close. Completely embarrassed on the field in all facets. And they were using that point, that loss, as a jumping point to their championship run, that conference championship run. The Chiefs had plenty of bad losses last year. You look, going back, I believe it was 2014, where the Patriots went into Kansas City and lost 42-14. And all the talk was about Tom Brady falling off the cliff. But the team used that as a jumping point to go out and win the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that this was an excusable loss by any stretch, because you never want to have your team lose the way they did on Monday night. All I'm saying is the Jets still have a lot of talent. They still have a Hall of Fame quarterback at their disposal. And we have seen many times where very talented teams get that wake-up call early in the season. They understand what they have to fix. They understand they're not going to be able to walk in every single Sunday and just show up and win. They're going to have to earn it. I think this is a very important lesson that the Jets learned early on in the season. You'd rather learn this lesson now than in week 12, week 14, when you're competing for a division title, for the number 1 seed, whatever it is down the road.
I'm curious, can you take us inside one Jets drive on this one? Because I'm wondering what the message has been all week. Is it, the famous line, relax, the 49ers are a good team, we'll get the rest of them? Or is it, we are not where we want to be and we are still not good enough? Which is it this week at Florham Park?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a balance. I think when Aaron Rodgers spoke, he kind of also said like, hey, we're not where we need to be. Clearly showed that. But we're going to get there. We're going to continuously improve. This is going to be a process, and we're going to get better and better to a point where we're going to be the team that nobody wants to play later in the year. And, you know, Robert Saleh said as much when talking about the defense. Everyone's worried about the defense, what's going to happen there. He essentially said, we're going to fix this. We are going to fix the defense. Now, many Jet fans will roll their eyes by hearing that. Robert Saleh's record does not instill confidence in anyone. You know, you're 17-35, 18-34, whatever it was. But as a defensive mind, I think we can all agree that he has a lot of talent in understanding how to develop young players, but also being able to put those players in a position to succeed. You've got three All-Pros on the lineup right now, four if you bring in Hassan Reddick. So there's going to be room here for this team to grow and develop at their own rate, regardless of what fans are expecting or what fans want. But the message inside One Jets Drive has been exactly the same. Listen, we took a beating in that game. We need to change a lot of different things. We need to execute better. But this is the kind of game, this is the stepping point that we use to build off of the rest of the year. Roger said it. Saleh said it. Even Jeff Olbrich said it. He's like, we didn't set the edge very well, but that's not going to happen again. We're not going to be put in that position again where we look that overmatched against an opponent.
Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter, joins us. Okay, so if you could, I mean, you're a writer, so if you could generate a headline for week one for the Jets, what would it be?
Oh, I would say debacle. I would say probably debacle, because you never want to have week one, you go out there and you look overmatched. It's always the case, and you always try to get the catchy headline. I would stress, though, and Danielle, we're meeting really for the first time here, but a lot of Jet fans know me as the positive guy on the beat overall, but I'm always someone that looks at that and says, hey, yes, they got their bell rung. They did a lot of bad things on the football field, turned the ball over, missed tackles, everything about it. But the pass protection looked really solid. Rodgers was on the field and played a full game for the most part. There are points of emphasis that you can take from this game and say, hey, we've got something here. We've got something to build off of here. We can work with this. That's something that I think fans should be looking forward to going in, regardless of how bad, objectively bad, it was on Monday night.
So I know you know this, but for anybody that missed it, Nick Bosa kind of had his own headline following the game. And here's the quote. He said, this week, I think we're playing a better team. They're playing better football, it looks like. We're going to have to be better in our techniques. We got away with some things last week, so we'll have to hone in and not pat ourselves on the back. Now, Nick, please tell me that this quote is posted somewhere in Florham Park.
Oh, I'm sure it is. We only get the locker room specifically. I'm sure it's posted somewhere. I will say, with Bosa, with the 49ers, this is what they do. They did that last year with the Eagles. They did that last year with the Cowboys. Every time they feel they have a big game coming up and they win and they look good while winning, they are always talking about it. It even happened last year during their Super Bowl run. This is who the 49ers are, and all the credit to them. When you're a team this dominant, you can back up your talk with your play, you have all the power to do so. Bosa's done it. Debo Samuel's done it. None of that surprises me one bit. When he actually said that, my first inclination was to say, yeah, this, welcome to the 49ers. They will kick your butt up and down the field and then tell you exactly how they did it following the game. So not much of a surprise to me from the Bosa perspective. I will say I think that says more about the Minnesota Vikings and how good they looked in week one against the Giants. But ultimately, I don't think if the Jets are going to be overly critical and serious about those kind of comments, I think they need to sort of remember who they played. The 49ers are one of the best teams in football. We have to acknowledge that at the very least.
Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter for Athlon Sports and Men's Journal, joins us. Okay, so we kind of opened this with a lot of things could have gone better in week one for the Jets. But Nick, if you're picking one thing, what is the biggest thing, now thinking of the Titans, what's the biggest thing that you're hoping these Jets clean up in week two?
It's got to be the edge. You set the edge. The Tennessee Titans, they're a quote-unquote rebuilding team. They've added a lot of pieces, Calvin Ridley, Legarius Sneed, that does not scream a rebuilding roster, but they're still a rebuilding team. They've got a rookie coach, second-year quarterback, a lot of question marks overall, but ultimately, the one thing the Callahan family does better than almost every other coaching family in this league, it's about the offensive line play. This offensive line for Tennessee is vastly improved. The Callahan family has a knack for taking mediocre players and developing them into top talents. Mm-hmm. So that's where the pressure is going to be on Jermaine Johnson, on Will McDonald. And I think the big underlying story going into this matchup, DJ Reed, a lot of people talking about him being questionable, but it's Michael Clemens being questionable with this injury. He's been limited in practice the last couple of days. He's the big one that I have to circle and keep an eye on, because he is one of the better run defenders on this defense right now. It really isn't saying much, but he's one of the better guys on the field for that particular instance. And if he is unable to play, that is going to force guys like Eric Watts, Braden McGregor, Leonard Taylor, undrafted free agents, to get prominent roles on the field in week two of the NFL season. Not what you want to see overall. So Clemens' health is going to be a big factor. And trying to figure out how to solve this Callahan rushing attack is going to be the main point for the Jets. If they're able to win, it's because they stuff the run. If they lose, it's because they just cannot do it, and they haven't been able to do it the last 2 years.
All right, so two more here. You're there all week. You're watching, you know, as much practice as you can. You're in there. You're talking with players. What is one adjective that you can use to describe what's been going on there all week?
I think calm. I really do. There's no panic. And there really wasn't any panic last year early on in the season. But this seems a little different. And I think having Rodgers here changes everything. When you have a four-time NFL MVP, future Hall of Famer, you know, we talk about him not being 100% and not being healthy and being 40 years old. No one knows how long he's going to be able to play this game. But at the end of the day, when you have an elite player like this at a prominent position, you gravitate towards him. You try and figure out, and you try to match his energy. And with Rodgers being as calm as he is, it's really helped this entire locker room just say, hey, it's one game. We didn't play well in one game, but we're not going to miss the playoffs over one game week one of the regular season. Let's regroup, figure out what we need to fix, and move on. And Robert Saleh kind of said that as well. He always talks about being the part of the solution, not being part of the problem. He doesn't coach to tell players what they did wrong. He coaches players to tell them how to fix the mistakes they made. That's been the kind of overall thought process throughout this locker room and throughout this week.
Nick Faria, New York Jets beat reporter for Athlon Sports and Men's Journal, is fantastic with us on The Fan. Nick, before I let you go, you got to give us your thoughts on this week's game. Who wins and by how much? What's the score?
I still think that everything's in front of the Jets. You've got matchups here the next 4 weeks. The Titans, the Patriots, the Broncos, and the Vikings, all winnable games, all against quarterbacks that are questionable, to say the least. So I think there's still a very good chance, even after this debacle of a 49ers loss, that they could come away 4-1 after the trip to London. They have the better matchup overall. It starts in Tennessee. I mentioned before, if they can stuff the run, they'll be in a very good position to win that game. I think they do. I think it's going to be a close matchup. I think I love what I've seen from Callahan, particularly in that first game against the Chicago Bears. But I do think the Jets win it. Late touchdown puts it to two scores, 28-17. And the frustration and depression that's going on through Jet fans turns around to happiness for at least 1 week.
All right. I love the positivity. He's going with the Jets. Nick, you have been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Appreciate it, Daniel. Thank you.